note in our text that the scene shifts as we move into the next verse. The scene shifts again back to the disciples. And the Bible tells us that the disciples were aboard this ship. They're calmly obeying the Lord's command. What was the Lord's command? Get in the boat, go to the other side. I'll meet you there. They're doing what the Lord said to do. But they were going to learn that being in the Lord's will doesn't always promise smooth sailing in life. Look at verse 24. But the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with waves, for the wind was contrary. So what we find here is that Jesus sent the disciples right into the middle of the storm. And as the disciples sailed across the Sea of Galilee, all of a sudden this ominous storm appears. And the text says that the ship was tossed with the waves, for the wind was contrary. It means exactly as you would imagine it. I looked up those words, like, just to make sure, am I getting the right picture here? And it means exactly as you would imagine it. Great big waves because of a lot of wind, and the ship is being tossed. It's rocking and rolling, and there's fear that comes with that. I've been out in the Cook Inlet at times where the water's been real smooth and you just cruise along. I've been out in the Cook Inlet at other times when there's 6, 7, 8 foot swells. Not so fun. There was one time I was out fishing and the day started out nice. It was with Brother Lambert. I told him, I'm never going to trust you again. No, I didn't really tell him that. The day started out fine, started out nice. But as the day went on and the tides turned and started coming back in, the wind started picking up too, and we were out there fishing, and then like the boat is just doing this, and you can't stand still. You're trying to fish, you got to have like your leg all pinned up against the thing, you got to hold on to something else just to keep your balance, because the boat is rocking, it's being tossed. And it got to be so bad, it was like, you know what, we probably should get out of here. Like, I don't really want to die today. And I'm starting to get, and he's like, yeah, we should probably go. And we start moving back in, and I'm telling you, the way out was so much smoother than the way back in. And it was kaboom, kaboom, kaboom. Like, ooh, oh, I like need a back adjustment after all of that. Like, I don't like that. I don't like that. I want smooth sailing. But I want that in life too. And it's not so much that. Sometimes it's just like that. Boom, boom. In life, that's what it feels like. The disciples were out there obeying the Lord, what the Lord said, and here they find themselves being pummeled. The ship was tossed from the waves, and the wind was contrary. Ever felt like the wind is really contrary in life? Well, as they battled the wind and the waves, I wonder what was running through their mind. I wonder what they were thinking about. Probably survival. How are we going to just survive this? But maybe they were thinking something like, ugh, why me? And why now? You ever had those feelings? One of the hardest things for believers to wrap our heads around is that we can be in the very center of God's will and still be pummeled with a storm. Did you know that? Yeah, I think you know that. We often wonder in the middle of a trial, in the middle of hardship, what am I doing wrong? When are things going to go right for me? And you can say, what am I doing wrong? The answer might be, nothing. You're not doing anything wrong. We might say, why me? Or how long is this going to go on? I want some reprieve. I want some rest. It's hard for us to come to a place of acceptance because we like our comforts and we like our ease. Right? That's what we want. Because we just want to feel good and we want to have smooth sailing and we want this life to not be full of trial. And so it's hard for us to come to acceptance because we want our comforts and we want our ease. You probably have heard of Isaac Watts. He was a great hymn writer. He had a little bit different perspective when he penned the words to a song that we sing at times. The song is, "Am I a Soldier of the Cross?" And when he penned those words, he was writing out words that depict what wholeheartedly following the Lord Jesus will most likely guarantee in our life. And it will most likely guarantee trials and suffering and persecution, actually. It's part of learning to be a disciple. And he said in the song, we sing it sometimes, "Am I a Soldier of the Cross?" He said, "Must I be carried to the skies on flowery beds of ease? While others fought to win the prize and sailed through bloody seas? Are there no foes for me to face? Must I not stem the flood? Is this vile world a friend to grace to help me on to God?" He's depicting what is certain in the Christian life. Not necessarily a life of ease, but foes to fight. And many times the foe that we fight is ourselves. Many times the foe that we fight is our flesh. But we want to pamper it. We want to coddle it. We want to keep it, you know, satisfied and keep moving along with ease in life. 1 Peter chapter 4, I want you to go over there with me. 1 Peter chapter 4, in verse 12. "Beloved," that's you. He's talking to you. He's talking to me. "Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened unto you. But rejoice, inasmuch as you are partakers of Christ's sufferings, that when His glory shall be revealed, you may be glad also with exceeding joy." He says, don't think it strange when the trials, the fiery ones come. As if some strange thing happened to you. Like, what in the world's going on? Why me? No, he says, actually, you should rejoice because the Lord's doing something in your life. You're becoming a partaker of the sufferings of Christ. James chapter 1, you know quite well. James 1 in verse 2. "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into divers temptations." And again, you probably know this. If you don't, you should write it down in your Bible. The words "fall into," it means to be surrounded by. It doesn't mean like you just stumble and fall into the ditch. No, it means to be surrounded by. He says, count it all joy when you are surrounded by what? Temptation. The word means adversity, adverse experience. That's not temptation of your flesh, like enticement to sin. No, the word here means adversity, adverse experience. Count it all joy when you're completely surrounded by adverse experience. Why? Why can you be joyful? Knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. There's a purpose in it. To complete us as children of God. There's an old proverb that says, smooth seas do not make skillful sailors. Think on it. Smooth seas do not make skillful sailors. When we face a storm or a trial, the Lord may be sending them into our lives for the purpose of growing us. And in that, we have to remember He hasn't forsaken us. God knows where we're going and has a plan for the path that He has set us on. Jesus sent His disciples out into the middle of the storm, knowing full well what He was doing and where they were going. Look at Psalm 139. Psalm 139. Verse 1. O Lord, Thou hast searched me and known me. Thou knowest my down sitting and mine uprising. Thou understandest my thought afar off. Thou compassest my path and my lying down, and art acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, Thou knowest it altogether. Thou hast beset me behind and before, and laid Thine hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high, I cannot attain unto it. Whither shall I go from Thy Spirit? Or whither shall I flee from Thy presence? If I ascend up into heaven, Thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, Thou art there. If I take my wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, for even there shall Thy hand lead me, and Thy right hand shall hold me. Why me, Lord? What's going on? How long am I going to have to endure? Listen, as the psalmist said, even in the middle of all of that, Thy hand will lead me, Thy right hand shall hold me. Listen, it's a when, not an if, that the trials of life are going to come and occur. And what we need to do is realize that there's always a purpose in it. It's always for spiritual blessing. Let's focus on the word blessing for a second. How do you define blessing? Do you define it like, well, it's blessing when things are going well? Do you define blessing like, hey, there's smooth sailing? I'm being blessed. Do you define blessing with, I just got a windfall of cash and money. Man, I feel good. I'm being blessed. It's a blessing. I'm happy. I'm joyful because things are going pretty smooth and pretty well. I'm being blessed. Do we define blessing that way? I think that is a blessing. But often that is our personal definition of blessing, and it is a blessing, but we're really naive to think that way if that's all we think about as far as blessing goes. Those are human feelings that define blessing. But if you look at the Bible, you can look at several Bible characters and biographies of their life, and they would prove that that's not the case when it comes to blessing. I think of Abraham. I think of Moses. I think of Joseph. I think of Daniel. I think of Job. I think of the Apostle Paul. Listen, their lives were anything but smooth. And yet they were greatly blessed of God. God worked mightily in and through them. While they were sometimes beaten and broken and persecuted, they were able to find blessing in trial. The Apostle Paul, let's just look at him for a second, a great example of this. Paul lived probably one of the most difficult Christian lives that you can imagine. Personally, professionally, whatever you want to call it, he didn't live a smooth life. In 2 Corinthians, in fact, he gives his personal testimony. Go over to 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Look at verse 23. Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more. In labors, more abundant. In stripes, above measure. In prisons, more frequent. In deaths, oft. Of the Jews, 5 times received I 40 stripes, save one. Thrice was I beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. Thrice I suffered shipwreck. A night and a day I have been in the deep. In journeyings often. In perils of water. In perils of robbers. In perils of mine own countrymen. In perils by the heathen. In perils in the city. In perils in the wilderness. In perils in the sea. In perils among false brethren. In weariness and painfulness. In watchings often. In hunger and thirst. In fastings often, in cold and nakedness, beside those things that are without, that which cometh upon me daily, the care of all the churches. Here's the external trials that he's walked through, but beyond that, there's the internal ones, the things that bring anxiety of soul and heart and mind. He says, I've faced it all. But skip to chapter 12, in verse 7. And lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of the revelations, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure. For this thing I besought the Lord thrice, that it might depart from me. And he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Notice his response. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then am I strong. What a powerful testimony here. He gives the example of the life that he lived, which was not smooth sailing at all. And then he says, beyond that, there's a thorn in the flesh that buffeted me, that I asked the Lord to take away from me. But the Lord said, my grace is sufficient. And his strength was in the Lord. And he said, most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. What was the blessing that he was finding in the middle of trial? The blessing he was finding was the power of Christ resting in his life. I want smooth sailing. But so often, smooth sailing will void me of the power of Christ in my life. We rejoice in the high times. But we often profit the most in the low times. Even after Paul's death, God still used him. The only way for Paul to experience the power of Christ was for him to walk through those trials. And that perspective enabled him to endure the hardship. The blessing was the power of Christ resting on him. That was the only way for him to have that experience. And he understood it. And he said, most gladly, therefore, will I glory in my infirmities. The perspective enabled him to endure the trial. That the blessing is not the smooth sailing. The blessing is the person of Christ and the power of Christ in my life. And because he persevered, God used him. And even after his death, his testimony of faith and the portions of Scripture that he wrote, God still uses them in our lives today. And at the end of his life, Paul said, for I am now ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought a good fight. I finished my course. I've kept the faith. Henceforth, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day. And not to me only, but unto all them that also love his appearing. That means that's for you and I too. And it means that we will have similar experiences, maybe not to the extent of the Apostle Paul's life, but certainly those principles of finding blessing in trial are the same. In 1899, Theodore Roosevelt delivered a speech entitled The Strenuous Life. And he said, I wish to preach not the doctrine of ignoble ease, but the doctrine of a strenuous life, the life of toil and effort, of labor and strife, to preach that highest form of success which comes not to the man who desires mere easy peace, but to the man who does not shrink from danger, from hardship, or from bitter toil, and who out of these wins the splendid ultimate triumph. Roosevelt spoke from personal experience. He had been sickly. He was asthmatic as a boy. But through personal determination, he became a vigorous outdoorsman, a skillful politician, and a statesman. One of the greatest presidents in the United States. His likeness, of course, appears on Mount Rushmore in honor of his part in making America a world power. Roosevelt achieved success in his life, but it did not come easily. And that's an example of a temporal life to an even greater degree of importance. As believers, a victorious Christian life is often marked by trials and hardships. Peter went into the middle of a storm because that's where Jesus sent him. And the Lord was going to teach him some real lessons about focus. Peter was an experienced fisherman. Enduring storms probably went with the profession. There were probably other times that he was out on the Sea of Galilee and experienced a storm. But this one was unlike anyone that he had experienced. And we read in the text that Peter feared and he thought he was going to lose his life. But that day, as the disciples were out on those angry waves, they were drawn by something on the horizon. This was about to be a storm that they would not soon forget. Go back to our text in Matthew chapter 14, and I'll close up today with this. Here's where we get into Peter's focus. Verse 28. Let me get there, sorry. Let's actually go back to verse 25. And in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went unto them, walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, it is a spirit. And they cried out for fear. But straightway Jesus spake unto them, saying, be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid. And Peter answered him and said, Lord, if it be thou, bid me come unto thee on the water. Here's Peter's focus. And next time we'll dig into this, but let me just highlight it with a couple of thoughts here. We're all focused on something. Whether it's a short-range focus like our daily to-do lists, or a long-range focus on something that's truly important in life, our attention is aimed at things that we look at and things that matter to us. What I mean by that is where we invest our time, where we invest our attention, that's the thing that's important to us. Maybe it's where we invest our talents or our treasures. In other words, what I'm talking about is what consumes our mind controls our life. But that also has consequences with it. And here's where we get into Peter's focus. And the Bible tells us that where our treasure is, there will our heart be also. Okay? And so next time when we come back, we're going to dig into this lesson here that the Lord taught Peter as he shifted his focus from one thing to the next and where it needed to stay and where it needed to be. We won't be next Sunday, we won't be in our Sunday school, we'll be in our Sunday school class, but Brother Bradshaw is going to be teaching. Our conference starts on Wednesday. And so Brother Bradshaw will be teaching in the Sunday school hour. So we'll pick this up again 2 weeks from now, okay? And hang on to these thoughts, even as you walk through the rest of this week. All right?